Okay, so our goal today is to look more with focus at the topic of shofar on Shabbos from a perspective a little bit of halacha, a little bit of history, and a little bit of hashkafa. And we had until now this week been talking about the broader question of akirat davar min haTorah, of the ability of the rabbis to not only enact gezeros, but do so in a way that impacts on dinim min haTorah, and the most well-known example perhaps being what comes up this week, not to blow shofar on Shabbos, even though by Torah law it would seem that we do blow shofar on Shabbos. And we raised various issues such as how exactly does that work? How could rabbinic law override Torah law? What exactly is the impact of that? And perhaps of greatest relevance to us today, what would be the result as far as shofar on Shabbos? Does the mitzvah continue to exist but is prohibited by binding rabbinic directive? Or should we say that no, their power extends beyond that and they can even essentially take it off the books, leaving us with no mitzvah anymore of shofar on Shabbos? A pretty striking idea, but nonetheless a strong possibility, at least according to some achronim. So we went through some of that, and there's always more to say about it. We still also want to talk about the nature of that gezeira, which we'll have to still leave for a future discussion. But today, just to look at the specifics of shofar on Shabbos, and in these various realms, there's quite a lot to say. And I'm just going to try to give you a little taste of it. If you want a few references to know where there is some more extensive discussion. So first of all, there's a sefer called Moedim L'Simcha, which is a very beautiful sefer focused a lot on issues of Minhagim on Yom Tovim and a lot of other issues in Yom Tovim. He has about 60, 70 pages on the topic with a lot of great detail, and some of which we will draw upon, and that's highly recommended should you find yourself with some extra time. Also, Rav Zevin in his classic sefer, L'Or HaHalacha, has a chapter devoted to some of these themes, and in particular as far as the Hashgafa. So our friend Rabbi Simon Shlita just came out with his new volume, Imrei Baruch, on Rosh Hashanah. It's a great source of Simcha for Rosh Hashanah, dedicated in memory of his father, Zichrono Livracha, who I had the privilege to know, and certainly worth acquiring. And he has an essay there focusing on some of the Hashgafic components, and we'll mention some of what he brings there as well. So first off, so what we've been assuming this week is that the prohibition to blow shofar on Shabbos is a prohibition midrabanan, that this is an example of what's called gezeira derabba, even though it probably precedes rabba, also a topic for next week. But the idea that Chazal often prohibited certain mitzvos that have objects involved from happening on Shabbos out of a concern that we would come to carry them on Shabbos. And that's the presentation as far as the Talmud Bavli is concerned. What you may have noticed, you saw the Makoros this morning, is that there is a significant difference between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi as far as how this is presented. And the assumption that this is the Drabbanan and all of its relevance to the broader sugya of Akiras Davar Min HaTorah has all been working with the premise of the Bavli. But the Talmud Yerushalmi comes from a different angle, which the Bavli considers and seems to reject, that it's actually a Din Min HaTorah. That we see already from the Chumash itself that we don't blow shofar on Shabbos. How does the Yerushalmi see that, and how does the Bavli consider that? What's the phrase that is built upon in order to come to that conclusion? From the Pasuk, Zichron Trua. Right? So Rosh Hashanah is called Yom Trua. It's the day of blowing shofar, but it's also referred to as the Zichron Trua. So the Gemara asks, really in both Shasim, the Gemara asks, so which is it? Is it a day in which we actually engage in Trua, or is it a day in which Trua is remembered? And the approach would be that when we blow shofar, it's a Yom Trua. But in Rosh Hashanah, Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, so then we don't blow shofar, so it's a day of Zichron Trua. It's a day in which the Trua is remembered. So the Bavli considers that, but says, how could that be? Because really, we know that it comes from this Gezeira, that's ultimately what the Gemara is going to say, and especially because, as we'll discuss in a few minutes, that there are exceptions to the Gezeira. And if this was really the Torah's message, if the Torah was really telling us that we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, and Zichron and Trua conveys that, so then that would tell us that we don't blow shofar anywhere on Shabbos. And we'll see in a moment that the Mishnah and the Gemara tell us that there are exceptions to this. So how could that be? So therefore, the Bavli concludes that it's not what the Pasuk means, and that the din is a din midrabanan. But from the Talmud Yerushalmi, it leaves it without that objection. And the impression we get from the Talmud Yerushalmi is that this is actually a din min ha-Torah, and that therefore the Pasuk is indeed telling us that. We should note that there are possibilities in the middle. So, for example, it could be both the Rabbanan and the Pasuk could be referring to it. So how could that be? So maybe it's a Gzeira the Rabbanan that goes back so far that it was already in effect in the time of the Torah. Maybe it was an immediate Gzeira the Rabbanan of Moshe Rabbeinu. We discussed earlier in the week, we talked about Sheva Brachos and Avelos as institutions midi Rabbanan, but those that may go back as far as Moshe Rabbeinu. So maybe that's the case here also, that the Torah was already addressing this Din the Rabbanan that existed that far back. Or it's also possible that this is some kind of an asmachta, that essentially that this isn't a din min ha-Torah, but it is something which is alluded to by the Pasuk. And many Rishonim assume that an asmachta is not the literal meaning of a Pasuk, but Chazal refer to a Pasuk in order to help us remember a certain din. But some of the Rishonim, the Ritva and Rosh Hashanah actually, and a few others see asmachta to mean something more than that, more than just a pasuk that the Chazal used for their purposes to help us remember something, but some kind of a remez that's already misinai, that some kind of a basis that was there beforehand that Chazal picked up on, that either that was indeed the intention of the Torah that this would be enacted, or some would understand it maybe as a heter to enact it. In other words, that in light, especially, of the issue we've been talking about this week, the striking nature of the conflict between Torah law and rabbinic law, so perhaps there is a notion that Chazal specifically looked for an indication from the Torah that what they were doing was justified and was in line with the Kavanas HaTorah. So when the Torah tells us that there is a time when Rosh Hashanah is Zichron Trua, so they were able to understand that, yes, that's like, for example, if Rosh Hashanah were to happen on Shabbos, so then it's justified for us to enact this rule not to blow shofar on Shabbos, and that would be hinted to or allowed, essentially, by the Pasuk telling us it is a Zichron Trua. So it comes out that there seems to be a machlokas, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, that our perspective has been the Bavli, that this is a Din Derabanan impacting Torah law, and the Bavli, having that perspective of the Yerushalmi, apparently understanding it to be actually a Din Min HaTorah. So Rabbi Simon in the Sefer Mebarach, he quotes a few interpretations of this Machlokes. One, he quotes the name of my friend, Rabbi Moshe Shapiro, who's quoting from the Klausenberger Rebbe, more of a technical kind of explanation, just to synergize what we did this morning, at the beginning of Seder. So we talked about the idea that we have extra blowings of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Kedei La'arbev HaSatan, in order to confuse the Satan. And what does that mean? How are we confusing the Satan? It's a very difficult idea to fully appreciate. But the Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi, Tosfos and Daf Tzayin Rosh Hashanah quotes from the Yerushalmi, that it refers to the idea that the Satan, when he hears extra blast of the shofar, he's going to think, this is the shofar gadol, this is the advent of the Mashiach, and no longer is there any time to be makatrig against the Jewish people. He's going to think the Mashiach is coming. So based on that, the Divrei Yatziv, the Klausenberger Rebbe said that we have a Mesorah that Mashiach is not going to come on Shabbos. So Sutton presumably learned those sugyas. He's going to know that on Shabbos it's not really possible, and he's not going to get confused by the shofar blown. So that's somewhat of a technical approach. But he quotes there also a mahalach in the name of Reshech Tishlita, that the idea is the difference between the Bavli and the Rishalmi really revolves around a different point, that we know that we don't make bakashos on Shabbos. We don't have personal tefillos on Shabbos. We say Shabbos Yimilizuk. Shabbos is a time when that's not the kind of atmosphere that we are involved in. So the question is, how do you look at that idea? So is that a prohibition, or is that something less than a prohibition? So in the Talmud Yerushalmi, that comes across as a prohibition, that there is Isser Litzvo at Tzarchu B'Shabbos here. Not allowed to ask Bakashos on Shabbos. But in the Talmud Bavli, it sounds like it's a little bit less than a prohibition. It's something of a different nature, because the Gemara says that if you're in the middle of davening and you realize that you already davened, so then you just stop immediately. You don't finish the bracha, you have Shemona Esrei, whatever you're doing, you just stop immediately and you cancel the tefillah. So the Gemara asks, well, why is that the din? We know that if somebody is davening on Shabbos and he starts saying tefillah chol on Shabbos, he forgets for a second and he says weekday Shemona Esrei, so we tell him to finish that bracha before stopping. So apparently you should finish the bracha and not just cut it off in the middle. So the Gemara says, how could you compare? That when it comes to somebody davening a second time, there's no reason for them to be davening a second time, so we should just stop it. But when it comes to davening a weekday tefillah on Shabbos, so there, really, it's not out of the question completely to be saying a weekday vakasha on Shabbos. He says, Gavra Chazdi, the Gemara says, the individual is doing something that's appropriate for him. It's just that Chazal, we're not matriach, the individual, to ask for bakashas on Shabbos. So we're given a break from asking for our personal bakashas on Shabbos, but in theory it fits. In theory it's something which has a place. So if that's the case, then maybe that's relevant to the whole question here, because we know that the imagery of the shofar is that essentially it is a nonverbal bakasha, whether it is a cry or something like that. Essentially, it's a way of asking for rachmanis. It's a way of expressing a bakasha to release us from our tzar. So the question is, does that have any appropriateness on Shabbos, or is that outright forbidden? So according to the Yerushalmi, that would understand that as being something which is completely incompatible with Shabbos. So that's why the Yerushalmi takes the perspective that even on a Torah level, shofar and Shabbos don't mix. That there wouldn't be a tkiyah shofar on Shabbos. But according to the Bavli, it's not out of the question to have a bakasha on Shabbos. It's just something that Chazal in general were not matriachas with. So therefore, shofar is not inherently incompatible to Shabbos. And thus, in the Torah, there wouldn't be any reason not to blow shofar on Shabbos. And as the Gemara, the Bavli has it, the Bavli points focuses on other points about it, that it's not a malacha, that blowing shofar, as difficult as it may be, those of us are not apt at it, but as the Gemara phrases, it's a chachma v'ein a malacha, it's something that's a skill, but it's not something that falls under the definition of a malacha that we prohibit on Shabbos. So there isn't any reason from the Bavli's perspective for it to be inherently incompatible with Shabbos, not as a malacha or either as a bakasha in this explanation. So therefore, we would have assumed no reason not to blow shofar on Shabbos. So the only reason we don't is the rabbinic law, is this idea that it's a concern of carrying on Shabbos. So if that's the consideration, okay, so we have this din d'rabbanan, and the Mishnah tells us that there are exceptions, that in the Mikdash, they would blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechal V'Yos B'Shabbos. The Yerushalmi has that Mishnah also, so the Yerushalmi has to explain that exception differently, and the Yerushalmi explains it based on a reading of the Pesukim also, that the Pesukim are also structured in order to convey that, yes, by Torah law, you don't blow shofar, but there's an exception in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what the Mishnah tells us, that in the Mikdash they would blow. So what exactly does the Mikdash mean? So there are many different views in the Rishonim. Most notably, Rashi says that the Mikdash means literally the Beis HaMikdash, not Yerushalayim, because the Gemara in the Mishnah contrasts Mikdash and Medina. So what's Medina? So Medina, Rashi says, is the whole rest of the country, including Yerushalayim. They would not blow. The Rambam in Perish Mishnayos understands the Mikdash as referring to Yerushalayim. And there are many nuances within Rashi and the Rambam, and there's a lot to discuss about this, a little bit outside of our scope right now, but there are many different views as to how exactly to understand both that din and the subsequent din that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, after the Churban, so he made a takana that they should blow in a makom that has a bezdin. So the idea that there was still a tkiya shofar somewhere, so that was a takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And the parameters of both of those, of what does it mean in the Mikdash and what does it mean in the takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, is subject to many nuanced debates within the Rishonim, as well as the assumption that different tkufas had different realities, that after the Sanhedrin was already no longer in the Beit HaMikdash, which was years before the Churban, it was one story, and then after the Churban, it was a different story. It's a very complex, detailed debate as to how exactly that played out historically, and there's a separate chapter about this in the Sefer Moed and L'Simcha for anyone who wants to go through all the nuances of that. But a major aspect of this machlokas is that here we find that there is this takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that they would continue to blow in a place where there is a bezdin. Now, why is there the exception? If we work off our premise that we're dealing with an issur d'rabbanan, so why does Chazal make the exceptions that are detailed here? So in the Beis HaMikdash itself, so we have an attitude, Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, that the Dinim D'Rabbanans that are there to prevent problems don't have impact inside the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara and other places associates that specifically with Kohanim, that Kohanim's reason, that Kohanim are particularly motivated and are particularly focused, and we don't have to worry that they are going to be careless, and elsewhere we have to be more worried. And the idea of the extension of Yochanan ben Zakkai is apparently because even without that, you would have Amos Bezdin Aleihem, that the Bezdin would be able to keep everybody straight, and we wouldn't have to worry about the concern that we have outside that context. And the assumption many Mepharshim have also is that there was a particular need that until the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so that, okay, at least we have somewhere where the shofar is being blown that year on Shabbos, on the day that it's Deraisa. And afterwards, so we need to have it somewhere. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai felt that there has to be a continuation of that one area of it being blown, and therefore a Bezdin would fill that role. But there is a major question in the Rishonim, which had major impact, as to what we mean by a Bezdin. So most of the Rishonim assume that we mean a Bezdin with a capital Beis and a capital Dalet. We mean a Bezdin, like it sounds like from the Gemara, like a Bezdin in Yavne, that we have smuchim, we have real dayanim from Moshe Rabbeinu, of the sort that we don't have nowadays, with all due respect to our smicha program. Now we deal with smicha on a whole different level. We don't have the classic smicha that we need in order to give onshin, in order to practice as a Bezdin in all senses of the word, that has a direct mesorah from Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't have that bezman as that. So most of the Rishonim assume that that's what you need for a Bezdin in this case. That we're talking about a real Bezdin in Eretz Yisrael with Smuchim that could indeed carry out this Takana. The major outlier here is the Rif. That the Rif, and it's not as explicit in the Rif's own words, but you see it from many of the other Rishonim who certainly talk about it, and just as a token, it gave you the rush to look at, which probably is the briefest presentation, but many other Rishonim, such as the Ritza, such as the Ran, and especially the Balamor and the Ramban, talk about this, that the Rif was apparently of the view that we don't mean Bezdin Samuch in Eretz Yisrael, but we mean any Bezdin, even in Chutz Laaretz, even in later generations, could blow shofar on Shabbos, and the Mesorah that is brought is that the Rif himself did this in Chutzlaret. In the medieval era, he would blow shofar on Shabbos because he had a Beis Din. So his Talmidim did not carry on this practice. And many of the other Rishonim, they quote this, and they're quite shocked about this. They say, this is really unbelievable. It's pretty clear from the Gemara and from Svara that that's not what we mean. We mean a Beis Din of Sluchim. You wouldn't think that a contemporary Beis Din would be enough for this purpose. And the Bala Mor writes about this. This is one of the things that he writes that are matmiyim. This is just astonishing. This is clearly way out there, and this is not what we do. But this was a view. Again, the Rif was certainly Bar Hachi to have his opinion. And it was a view that has continued to reverberate throughout the generations. And this was a major discussion going back not so long ago, going back about 140 years ago, 138 years ago or so. There was a movement to do this in Yerushalayim, and it could be it happened before, it could be it happened afterwards, and the details are a little bit disputed, but at least one version of the details is what I'll relate here. Again, there's a lot of literature about this. At the time, this was mostly fought out in Torah journals, which then and now is one of the major venues for hot-button contemporary halachic topics. So Torah journals were going back and forth about this at the time. Now, many of this has been collected in various places, and I recommend those same svarim I mentioned before. But at least one version of the story is as follows. There's a great Talmud Chacham by the name of Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger, who was from the tradition of the Chacham Sofer, wrote a sefer called Lev Ivri on the writings of the Chacham Sofer. He was a grand Talmud because he was a student of the Chacham Sofer's son, the Ksav Sofer, and he was also a student of the Maram Shik, who was one of the primary Talmidim of the Chacham Sofer. And he said that we should do it. He said that in Yerushalayim, we should, 138 years ago, he said, we should blow shofar. We should do it. We have a Beis Din. And this is Yerushalayim, and we should blow shofar. And he advanced various arguments. He at first wanted to at least to be choshesh to one possibility that maybe you really need a Beis Din that's at least comparable to a Sanhedrin. So you should get 23 chachamim to be a part of this. And that was his effort. Apparently, at one point, it looked like he was going to have that, but then people got nervous, as you can understand, that this is something that it would seem like is against the Takanas of Chazal, and that the tradition for many hundreds of years has been to work under that assumption that we don't blow shofar on Shabbos. So apparently many got cold feet, and he ended up doing it in a smaller group. And there's a lot of disputed opinions as to what would be the attitude of other contemporary Gdolim at that time. Some were expressed. There was a lot of letters that went back and forth. And some, there are different versions as to what some of the great Gaonim who were present in Yerushalayim at the time, most notably Shmuel Salant, who was the Rebbe of Yerushalayim, and they had brought in the Adaris. The Adaris was Rav Kook's first father-in-law. He was a tremendous Talmid Chacham. And he was brought in to succeed. The assumption was he would take over from Shmuel Salant, but he ended up getting sick himself because he passed away before he had the opportunity to fill that role. But their view about this was also a subject of much discussion, and we'll come back to that in a second. But there was a extensive back and forth about this as to whether this was the right move, whether this was an acceptable move. And Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger made this argument in writing and in many other venues that this was the right thing to do. And part of his approach, based also on his feeling that this was legitimate in the tradition of the Rif, Kal Vachomer from the Rif did it in Chutzlaret, he could certainly do it in Yerushalayim, and that there was justification to do so. And that, he said, you have a Din D'oraisa. Din D'oraisa should certainly outweigh any considerations midrabanan. So all of you here will say, well, hold on a second. We've been learning that sugya all week. So we know that, yeah, that's what you would think logically, but seems like from Chazal that that's not true, that Yesh Kol Achlak Adavrim and HaTorah B'Shev Al Tasa, and that's indeed the power that exists, is invested within them. So he asserted that no, that that's only true when we know that Chazal for sure did that for a definite concern, and that they intentionally were okay the whole mitzvah. But here we have this tradition that there was meant to be a place where there was the shofar blown, that there was the exception that was carved out for the mikdash and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Chazal never intended to totally take this off the map, and therefore we shouldn't see this as an example of Yesh Koach, at least as far as that absolute in application, and that should be our imperative that we should blow shofar on Shabbos. So this was a major debate, and get different versions of what exactly happened. It sounds like the most one version of what happened is that he did go ahead with the blowing, but without the larger group that he had planned. And there was much controversy that surrounded it. If it's hard for you to believe that this could be unclear as to what actually happened, all you have to do, as we alluded to before we began today, is look at newspapers today, and you see you can't get a clear picture of what happened yesterday, what happened this morning. So don't be so surprised that 138 years ago in the pre-internet era, there's some murkiness as to what actually happened or what didn't happen, and to what was the attitude of other Gedolim at the time. So it is brought, whether this is the absolute unanimous version or not, that both Rav Shmuel Salant and the Adaris, who we mentioned a few minutes ago, that neither was willing to endorse this, neither was willing to be the name behind it, but they were both not so forcefully against it either. And that Rav Shmuel Salant had said that if he heard people were going, he wouldn't object. You know, if they asked him, he didn't feel that this was the halacha and this was the tradition, so he wasn't going to be the maskim, and if somebody asked him, that's what he would tell him. But anybody who was going to participate, he wouldn't feel any need to stop them. And maybe it's especially if they're not going to be the ones blowing the shofar, so let them hear the shofar blowing, and he wouldn't feel a need to object. Double, so half a hand, two fingers.
Yeah. So they weren't sure if it was really a din derabanan that the rabbanan were awkward.
Well, his argument also in terms of the impact of the akiras. We'll come back to that in a second. So that's clearly the main issue here. So let's come back to that point in 1 second. But as far as the Adaris is concerned, so it's also quoted that the Adaris years later, about 25 years later, in the previous summer, was going to be a shofar, and she was going to be a first day Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos coming up that year also. And the previous summer, he was sick, and he said that, who knows if I'm going to ever live to hear the mitzvah of shofar Mahatorah again. And if I were to hear that this coming Rosh Hashanah, Shachal Yosef Shabbos, that Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger was going to blow a shofar, I would come and listen behind the fence. You know, meaning that he wouldn't want to be there in a visible way, because he wouldn't want anyone to think that he is the authority who is allowing this, but he would take advantage of the opportunity. If he could do it bitzina, if he could do it surreptitiously, he would take advantage of this so that he should be able to hear the mitzvah min HaTorah of shofar one more time. So Velvel started to ask the question that essentially this connects to a point of lumdus that we've been talking about this week. Right, so this is essentially one of the practical implications of the question that we had been discussing. So what was the impact of the gezeira that when Chazal said, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, so did they actually uproot it, or do they just tell us not to do it? So the Nafka Mina, we've mentioned a few over the course of that sugya, but here this was invoked in this context also, or this is beneath the surface in this context. Because let's say, as most of the Rabbanim throughout history have maintained, that this continues to apply and that a contemporary non-Samach Bezdin is not empowered to do anything differently. So they would not take the steps themselves of authorizing or blowing a shofar themselves. But if somebody else was willing to take it on their shoulders, so is there any value in listening? Is there a value in participating? Should you say that, listen, I don't think this is something I'm comfortable doing, but l'maisa, there is a mitzvah min ha-Torah, so let's take advantage of the mitzvah min ha-Torah and fulfill it? Or would you say, no, I believe that Chazal completely uprooted it, and there isn't any mitzvah, and it's very nice that, well, whoever is happy to do it, but I don't see any value in listening because, as far as I understand, there is no mitzvah whatsoever. So that is essentially what is beneath the surface of this issue, and it's not what was expressed necessarily in the transmission of what we have from Rav Shmuel Solant and the Adaris, but that seems to be the underlying question. And if you look in that Sefer Moedim L'Simcha, so he has a very extensive discussion about the whole history. And then he writes on his own as far as what the lumdus is of this question, and he draws on many of the same makoros that we spoke about during this week, that that seems to be the question of the Kiva Eger and the Kavita Kasheta. And the others, the major players here, that seems to be the Nekudas HaMachlokas as well. So do you say, like the Kavi DeKasheisa, that this is off the table and there's no point in participating at all, the mitzvah is no longer there? Or, as he assumes would be the conclusion of Rabbi Akiva Eger, that, no, Chazal said not to do it, but there's still a Kiyum mitzvah, so if someone else, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chaim, so if somebody else is convinced that he is in his rights in doing so, so you might as well listen because you will be mekayim the mitzvah d'oraisa if this person is indeed justified in doing so. So it gets a little bit into the parameters of eilu ve'eilu divrei elokim chayim, because you could say, all right, listen, you're entitled to your opinion, but it's just worthless for me. Or you say, all right, you're entitled to your opinion, and therefore, so what is a shofar blowing? A shofar blowing from Bar Chiyuva. And even though I personally hold you shouldn't do it, but you're doing it, it's creating a valid shofar blowing, and if I could do it without adding to the machlokas, like the Adaris was saying, he wouldn't want to be visible, but if he could do it without putting fuel in the fire of a controversial issue, so then they would participate as well. So this is a fascinating, ongoing historical question. And just to address for another minute or two, but some of the hashkafa involved, so that was also a part of the issue that the one of the arguments that the Rosh Lashinger made is that we have to really hop onto this because a mitzvah min ha-Torah, of course, and that's important, but it's not even stam a mitzvah min ha-Torah, it's a mitzvah min ha-Torah of great significance for us and great significance for our well-being, because Chazal tell us that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, they're also on Daf Tzayin and Beis, that kol shana she'ein atriyim b'tzila, that if you don't blow shofar at the beginning of the year on Rosh Hashanah, so chalila, it doesn't work out well by the end. It's a bad start for the year if the year does not begin with a blowing of the shofar. So therefore, we have to do whatever we can to hold on to this mitzvah, and if we have the opportunity to do it, and all of this, of course, was Bitsiruf, his belief that the facts justified. He's working off of a riff perspective. If he didn't, you have to have all the parts together in order for this to make sense. So if we didn't have the riff and we didn't have the exceptions in the Mishnah, so then he never would say that based on Hashkafa we should overturn the Din Drabanan, or based on his lumdus about the Daraisa being more important than the Drabanan. So we would have said, what about the whole sugya that we've been talking about? It's just Petziruf, the fact that the Mishnah mentions this exception and that the Rif had his position and that there is room to believe that there is this room carved out within the Din. So Petziruf, all of his other arguments, that was a part of what he put forward. So this is a pretty big question, the hashkafic issue, that we're willing to really take such a hit, essentially, that the Gemara says that we are going to chalila not have the year that we hope if we don't have the shofar blown at the beginning. So how do we take on such a burden? How are we okay with that, considering what the cost would be and for this din d'rabbanan? Now, parenthetically, somebody mentioned earlier in the week that maybe there's a statement here about the Yontif Sheni, that the idea that even the Din Darabanan that we have a blowing shofar the second day is able to take on the attributes of the shofar in its fullest implications. That's also something to ponder. But if we just focus on the mitzvah d'oraisa and our sacrificing the mitzvah d'oraisa, so that is something which really seems to be quite a sacrifice. And maybe that's the point. The Meshech Chachma and many others have comments about this. Rabbi Simon and Sefer brings a few different interpretations, but they're all basically in the same direction, or many of them are in the same direction. The Meshech Chachma is the most well-known of those who comment on this point, where he suggests, and it's based on a Tosus, as we'll come to in a second, that the idea of blowing shofar on Shabbos, blowing shofar being so crucial, that is overridden by the notion of not blowing shofar on Shabbos in order to protect the Shabbos. And there's much written hashgafically about what exactly that does for us and the imagery of Shabbos and tshuva and Shabbos on shofar. And we spoke about it a little bit in Parshas Shir, Parshas Nitzavim last week, if you recall. But the way the Meshech Chachma presents it is that it's true that we need the shofar, and it's not stam a mitzvah, but it's like a spiritual healing. So even if we have a good excuse, we're missing something so crucial. We're missing the spiritual healing that we need. But nonetheless, our care about Shabbos and our care about taking this precaution is going to have the same impact, is going to accomplish for us what the shofar otherwise would have accomplished. And he notes that we have these chus of the Akedah that we call upon on Rosh Hashanah in general. We draw upon the Akedah as a source of merit for us. So too, the commitment that we have to the overall halachic system and to Shmirah Shabbos is such a powerful priority that we are sacrificing what we think is important in order to do that. That essentially is the Akedah all over again. It's just like Avram was ready to sacrifice. I mean, can't really compare it, but the idea, the mentality is related, that just like Avram was ready to sacrifice this tremendous resource he had for his future, so too we do that in order to maintain the larger structure, and therefore that's an Akedah as well, and that chus is what is going to accomplish the same thing that the shofar would. And the drashas of the Kadosh Lover of the Eretz Tzvi has a similar point applied a little bit differently, but that we talked about also this week about the idea of Lo Sasser and the implication that we have from the Medrash that Rashi quotes, that Yomun is small means that we follow even when it's against what seems to be true, and even according to everybody would agree, if it's what seems to be true, we're just surprised, so we still follow. So that ability to appreciate Chazal's Chachma, even when it's something that's very shocking to us, so that is in line with the Akedah, that is in line with Avram's ability to trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, even though it seems so surprising, and even though it seems so different from anything he would have guessed, he was able to place that faith, and we place that faith in the Chazal also, and there also it makes the point effectively in the spirit of the Akedah, and therefore our Shmirah Shabbos is able to prevail as the message that the shofar would otherwise accomplish. I remember hearing once from Rabbi Twersky, the name of his father, that he commented, the Gemara says that Rabbi Nissim ben Aziel, when he used to learn, so he had such a power that, I forget, it was one of his Talmidim, that when he used to learn, there was such a power that there would be a flame above his head, and a bird that was flying over his head would get burnt by the flame. So his father asked if that was what the smallest Talmud was able to accomplish. So what happened when the Rebbe learned? When the Rebbe learned it could burn a 747, you know, what kind of power did he have? So the answer is that when the father learned, the bird didn't burn. Meaning that as impressive as it is to have big spiritual kochos, it's even more impressive to be able to be disciplined and to be able to control them. And so too, that as much as there is a fantastic symbolism to the shofar, but also the restraint and the self-control that is involved in Shmira Shabbos is sometimes a more important message, and that also contributes to what we're accomplishing on Rosh Hashanah. And that's in the spirit of what we've been talking about this week, about Chazal feeling that even when there is a aseh that is very important, to be able to protect the los aseh, the mishmarti, can be the most important message. And I just want to close on one other point that's particularly relevant to us this year. So the idea that observing this din on Shabbos is not going to hurt us in terms of the statement of the Gemara about not blowing the shofar in the beginning of the year. So this is based on a Tosus over there, and that Gemara, Tosus quotes the Bahad, that statement, that it's a bad sign if you don't blow shofar at the beginning of the year. So Tosus says, we're not talking about a Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. We mean if there's some onus that gets in the way and doesn't let you blow the shofar. But apparently when it's Shabbos and you're holding back for that reason, this line doesn't apply. So if you think about that and you think about the crisis that the whole world is going through right now, and to our great chagrin, it's hitting Eretz Yisrael especially hard right now. And Eretz Yisrael is going into a full lockdown, and we hope things won't get any worse anywhere. But at the moment, Leon Harer was zochet, at least in the New York, New Jersey area, to be better off. Should stay that way and get better. But there are many Jews across the world who are not going to be able to hear the shofar this year because of onus, because of the medical considerations and the danger that is getting in the way. And when we think about this Tosus that's saying, oh, that would be a situation which is bad news. But if it's Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, then it's not bad news. So here's a chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam that in this year, when there are so many who would have been in that category of not hearing Mishum Ones, so we have this chesed that happens to also be Shabbos. Shabbos is able to take the place of the actual Tzkiyah Shofar. So we should be able to hold on tightly to that chus, that the ability to find merit through our Shmira Shabbos on Rosh Hashanah, even without Tzkiyah Shofar, as a affirmative goal and not an onus situation where we just don't have any choice, but as a decision to uphold the system in the way Chazal asked us to, and to recognize the akedah, so to speak, that is symbolized by that, that should be a schus for the entire world. On Rosh Hashanah, we pray for the whole world. That's the theme, Hayom Haras Olam. We're davening for everybody. So everybody is in crisis right now, and Eretz Yisrael is in crisis right now, and all of our communities are challenged right now. And our hope is that through the special schus that comes from our attitude towards the Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, we should be able to push through it, and we should see a complete fulfillment of the idea of Tichle Hashanah V'Kil Osel, let all of our anguish from this past year be placed on the previous cheshbon, and may we approach a new year with a clean slate, and with all of the brachos that are in potential for us should be actualized. So I wish that all of you should have a wonderful Rosh Hashanah. God willing, we'll see you on Tzom Gedalia when we pick up with some sugyos related to that day. But I wish you all of the brachos that this Rosh Hashanah can bring, and I look forward very much to seeing you next year. All right, so it should be really only good things.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.